A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, as far as believing in it, I don't believe in anything.
Wait a minute, hang on, let me crunch those numbers again.
A full stop to the doubters. Anunnaki's real.
Don't tell me the Anunnaki are Nazis.
Hello and welcome to Weird Tales and the Unexplainable with me, Tiss. I got it right the first time. Also my co-hosts, Bob.
Hey, this is Bob Shoy.
Beefy.
Hey, this is Beefy.
Gold. We're back with gold.
I rolled straight into that. I didn't...
Tiss, that was your best...
You aced it.
Yeah, that was your best ever intro, like first time.
Only taken you 4 years.
It's, yeah, been practicing.
Yeah, we didn't get like a minute of you acting like a fool.
No, but we are on minute 15 of recording, so.
Right, let's roll straight in.
Let's do it.
Do you guys know what this is about?
No idea. Beef, have you got any ideas of what the episode is?
No, I was thinking about it today. I was like, I wonder what he's going to go for. I don't know. No idea at all.
I have a feeling it's going to be a conspiracy of some sort.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
No. Well, I mean, I don't know. I guess it's not. It kind of is.
The only reason I thought that is at the end of the last episode, when I edited it, you said, I said, Tiss is hosting next time, and you said, yeah, I think I'm going to do a conspiracy one.
I don't remember saying that. That's
cheating.
Well, it kind of is conspiratorial. Talking about the Anunnaki.
Oh, okay. You talked about doing this ages ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really know anything about this, so I'm excited.
Yeah.
I know almost nothing about this. The only thing I know about it is that we wrote it down a long time ago.
That's yeah, exactly. The only thing I know is Tiss messaged us in the chat like 2 years ago saying, I want to do an episode on this. I didn't even know what it meant, and I wrote the word on our list.
Yeah, my old landlord, Max, was always going on about the Anunnaki. He was just like, do a pod on it, man. I never checked it out for a long time.
Nice.
And yeah, I just thought it was the right time.
Awesome.
Interesting subject. Me and Lids.
That's cool, man.
Deep into it.
Is it extraterrestrial themed?
Yes.
Right. That's the only thing I thought about it. I thought it was aliens. And we haven't done an aliens one for a while.
The Anunnaki were about in the Sumerian times, roughly 2500 BC, so about 4,500 years ago. Well, before that as well.
Wow, ancient aliens.
Yeah, ancient aliens.
Nice.
Do I need to get copyright allowance
on that? Is that the name of the episode? Ancient aliens. That's pretty bait.
Do the old bait and switch on it.
So, the Anunnaki came about, how people found out about them, was the Sumerians had these seven tablets that we've decoded. A few people have decrypted it. There's one dude I'm going to find later, because it's in... There's names in a video we're going to watch. And he's decrypted it differently, but... a lot of people decrypted it as the creation story. It's the Sumerian creation story.
Okay. Huh.
And that is to do with the Anunnaki, is how they believe we were created, or how they document we were created, however you want to see it. So in their creation story, there was a planet which comes into orbit into our solar system every 360,000 years.
Right.
It's called Nibiru, or Planet X. And actually, science has now proved there is a 10th planet in our solar system, which is way past Jupiter.
Really?
Or way past Pluto, which has a very strange orbit.
And is that possibly Planet X?
Possibly Planet X. I don't know if it has the same orbit as what people think Planet X and Nibiru would have had.
Is it called Planet X just as a code name, or is it because they thought it was the 10th planet, like X, like the Roman numeral?
Ooh.
Ooh.
It's
got you there.
I thought it was Planet X, but actually, no, I think Planet 10 is more on
the works way. Either way. Like
It works, yeah. It's like iPhone X.
Yeah.
iPhone 10. That got me by surprise as well, so...
Well, yeah, where was iPhone 9?
Weird news, conspiracies. Where was iPhone 9, mate?
Where was not iPhone 9.5?
So, wait a minute. So, is Planet X, is it sort of like tinkering along at the brink of the solar system, like just clinging on into the... I don't know.
Apparently, it just has a crazy orbit.
It has a weird orbit, so it like kind of almost like it leaves our sort of set of planets and then re-enters it. And
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
Ah, apparently, okay.
I don't know scientifically
if
how
that's
possible that
yeah.
is,
but we're gonna run with it.
It's pretty hard to research that part. I would have had to speak to like an astrophysicist, I guess.
We could get Jack on the phone.
He didn't even bother getting an astrophysicist in.
That'd be great. So the story goes that this planet crashed into Earth, or what was Earth. Earth was a bigger planet back then, or it was called something else.
Back then?
Earth was a bigger planet. Sorry, I want to pause. Can we just sit on that for a minute?
Earth was bigger than what it is now.
How? Right. What do you mean?
Just the planet was bigger.
Did it shrink into the hollow cavity of itself a little bit?
No. The other planet collided with us.
Right, and squidged us down.
And apparently that half of it caused the asteroid belt, which we know is in our solar system.
Right,
The what's it called? The Kuiper asteroid belt?
Don't know.
I have no idea of the names.
A lot of the story is founded in actual fact, but mm-hmm. you don't know... when it was doctored to say that.
So was it, I'm getting in my head, I was like, when you said it collided with Earth, I was like, imagining full on impact, but it probably would have just like grazed the size, like the Titanic grazed the size of the iceberg.
It just smashed off half, and then apparently they terraformed our planet over years.
Right.
I learned today actually, which is crazy, is that obviously, the world isn't actually round. It's not flat. It's definitely not flat, but it's not round. It's,
it's like oval. It's like squashed.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like blocky and imperfect. It's not like...
Well, because we have mountains.
Perfect
and
sphere.
Stuff.
But it's,
yeah,
when
it's not
we
a total sphere.
See it from space, the atmosphere and the way the light bends, our eyes view it as a sphere.
Right.
So that was interesting. I didn't know that.
But that's why if you were to look at... That's why they've recently... If you look at like the size of Africa, on a typical globe, it's quite fat.
Mm.
It's sort of like quite short. They're like, no, yeah. it's incredibly long and spans an enormous part of the planet. Like we thought it would anyway.
The way you said that, people's like, oh, I thought it was really little, and then I went there. It's actually massive. On a map, it looks tiny, and then when I was there, yeah. it was massive.
Yeah, on the map, it's only, like 3 inches long.
Couldn't even see the sea. So yeah, Tis, before we move forward with this, do you obviously, when you started researching this topic, it sort of grabbed your interest a little bit,
yeah,
but is it an interesting subject because it's an interesting story, or how fully into believing in this are you?
I mean
don't show your load just now, mate.
Oh, you can hold that back if you like.
No, I've been thinking about this for a while now, and after doing this many pods, I feel like I've changed as a person. I used to be very believing in stuff. Now, I take everything.
It's made you more skeptical.
I'm more skeptical, but I give everything a fair shake, but
yeah,
I actually
there's
agree
some
with
things
you.
With I feel like from the research I've been doing, there's themes that come up, there's patterns which are patterns of people telling stories mm-hmm. and not facts, and yeah. I've just you can see through the bullshit. You can see, okay, this video is going to tell me absolutely nothing of truth.
I feel yeah. like we've between us done so much research into like sort of weird topics, it's actually made us less forgiving.
Yeah,
yeah,
totally. We know our stuff now.
Well, when we first started, we're like, oh, that's really interesting, yeah, and sort of went along with any old dickhead on the internet. And,
yeah. Yeah, a bit more discerning in my sources now.
Yeah.
I think you have to, like, we've taken in, like, the crazy theories, yeah. and now it's time to, like, you know, find yeah. something beyond that.
I mean, I still wouldn't say we're experts. We still get bad reviews. No. We got a bad review recently that was like, we don't actually know what we're talking about, and we never claim to. I don't think those people know what they're getting into. That's not what the episode, our show's about. It's about, here's some people visiting a topic they don't know anything about for an hour or so.
Yeah.
It's not, we can't be experts in everything.
No.
Yeah, and if we were to do a series on it, then, you know, if we were to get a series done on it, then yes, we'd probably know a lot more about it by the end of it.
But exactly, and there are other podcasts out there that do that. That isn't what our show is. So it's kind of irritating when we get negative reviews that say that, because it's like we never claimed to be experts in this stuff. But
well, tell them. On the review, send a comment back and be like...
Nah. Anyway, let's get on with Anunnaki.
Yeah. So yeah, as far as believing in it, I don't believe in anything, like anything. I just take everything at face value, and I just look, I don't look at facts, I look at people saying the facts, and I'd look at, you know,
this is getting closer to 30, you can hear it in his voice.
If someone's
anymore.
Making money off spouting theories, you've got to think maybe they want to carry on making new ones to keep not having to get a job, you know? So, I'm just skeptical of people. I'm not skeptical of conspiracies.
I think it's more like you've always saying this is, you know, being on the pod has helped your understanding and helped shape what you believe. I think the same would go with theology. Like, I would like to say that my study of theology has shaped my skepticism about things, but also doing this pod has meant that I have studied harder because I want to make sure that I can explain my faith to people.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting. Since I've started the degree, I've actually found that because I do the pods, this is way off topic, but it's actually helped me in my studies.
Yeah.
Like, even with 5 minute, like, I'm used to writing essays because I write an essay for every episode of that. So when they tell me I've got to write an essay,
yeah,
like the one I wrote today that's only 1,000 words, I'm like, that's like a quarter of an episode of 5 minute folklore. Like, I bash that out in no time.
Yeah.
So I haven't got that apprehension about essays and researching and stuff. Anyway, that's way off topic. That's not even going in the episode.
Back to Anunnaki.
So Tissy, whack us with the Anunnaki stick.
Back to it. So the 10th planet, 360,000. I'm just laughing, actually. No, I can't go off topic again. So 360,000... years, that's every time the planet comes in. I'm trying to... So the Anunnaki...
Wait, hang on a sec. It comes in every 360,000 years?
Yeah.
How do they measure that time scale? Well, you haven't even been around for that long.
I mean, that is just... We're going off hearsay from the Sumerians on that one.
Oh, right, okay.
A lot of these facts, which is what I like about it, is that it's not anecdotal. It's... Well, I guess it is anecdotal from people who translate the things, but at least they're not saying that they believe it, they're saying the Sumerians believed it, which is
I suppose scientifically, if you were mapping the trajectory of a moving planet,
yeah,
or whatever, you could say, well, if it carries on this route, it would take 360,000 years to come back to that point again.
Yeah
So okay, all right, I'm with you.
Yeah. I guess that would be their best guess, isn't it? You know, it's like astrology in biblical times was much better than we used to think. You know, they used to be quite hot on it. Like some of the stuff that is talked about in the Bible astrologically is still the same. So it's not, but yeah, I guess that would be there. Like they guess. If I was to look at that though, and I was to do that maths, I'd be like, well, according to my calculations, this says we're not going to see that planet again for another 360. That can't be right. I'd be like, wait a minute, hang on, let me crunch those numbers again. But yeah, that's fair enough.
Sorry we keep derailing you, by the way, Tis.
No, it's interesting because I forgot to mention that there's a lot of crossover with Christianity. So, well, I guess it is Christianity. Christianity, the Bible, and the Anunnaki. There's lots of crossovers.
Right.
And the Sumerians, actually. Probably not the Anunnaki. The Sumerians is probably more apt because Sumerians are real. Whereas the Anunnaki aren't. Well, they might be real.
Yeah, Samaria is a place in the Bible, yeah.
Is our theology expert just weighing in there?
And Sumer is mentioned. In near Iraq, isn't it? Sumer is like between Turkey and Iraq.
It's like, yeah, Middle East.
The Middle East, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, basically the creation story, the planet collides, they terraform our planet. There's some, and I have to, it will say it in this video as well. I don't know where in the timeline this comes, and this goes back to Noah. His name was different in the Sumerian text, but basically the Anunnaki created humans and they fused Homo erectus with something else, and they used us as slaves for a bit, but they didn't like us that much and they thought we were their failed experiments. They flooded the world and killed us all apart from, you know, a man and a woman and an ark.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And this that comes up. But then essentially the Anunnaki fused their DNA with that of Homo erectus and created human beings.
Right.
That they're the missing link.
Oh, okay.
To why we are now conscious beings rather than animalistic monkeys. But we are kind of a fusion of the two. And it was because we were going to be their slaves. We were to mine gold for them. Their atmosphere is really shit, apparently. Technical term.
Was that in the scientific research you did?
That was in the tablets, funny enough.
Atmosphere's really shit, but they're nice people, so...
So their ozone needs repairing, and gold is the secret ingredient, and apparently, I haven't researched this fact either, but it was told to me as a fact through a YouTube video, so I've got no reason to distrust it.
Right.
That they use gold on like satellites to fend off space radiation, and the properties in gold can protect our ozone essentially.
And they don't have gold on Planet X then.
No, we have gold. They need it bad. They need it bad, Bobo.
I like gold.
Yeah, so anyway, gold member came down.
Isn't that weird?
Hey, I'm Anunnaki. Isn't that weird?
For a topic I'm really interested in hearing about, we're going off rails so much.
We are off rails.
Like, when you said it, I'm like, oh, I wasn't expecting this. I'm like totally down for learning about this. But I just, yeah.
Tis, I think you should take it as a compliment. We're not, you know. No,
I love it. Exciting, I'm getting into it. I love the breaks because it helps me regather myself and try and like pummel home some more.
To find that timeline in the video thinking about Goldmember.
I'm definitely going to insert a clip for Goldmember.
The look of it, the taste of it, the smell of it, the texture. I love gold so much that I even lost my genitalia in an unfortunate smelting accident. Hence the name Goldmember.
So also online on YouTube, I found that our DNA has a splice in it, apparently.
Our DNA.
We have a splice. in our DNA, which we can't explain, which could have been the splicing of our DNA. I think there's something like 5% of our DNA represents us, and this is all total anecdotal facts. Don't take this to the bank.
I won't quote you on it. It's all right.
It's something to do with our DNA being spliced, and there is
such an oxymoron.
There is there's some facts out there on YouTube on it, and essentially, so the Anunnaki, these gods called Enlil and Enki, and it was like evil versus good, and one of them eventually. And this goes to the Garden of Eden sort of thing. And I should have explained, actually. Enki and Enlil and all of these actually are like reptilians. The Anunnaki are kind of reptilistic.
You should have mentioned that, yeah.
Yeah.
I should have mentioned that.
Got it.
Because I keep seeing the Sumerian statues and they all look very bird-like and stuff. But apparently it's reptilians. And this is strange. So the Anunnaki and Sumer come down, and they're reptiles, right? So they're like the great snake.
Right.
Japanese.
As in
Japanese
the snake
history,
from the Garden
talk
of Eden
about dragons.
Story.
Dragons that came from the heavens.
Yeah.
Right? Japanese across the world.
Okay.
Australia, the Aborigines, the snake-like beings from underground.
And the rainbow serpent, their
the
creator
god.
Serpent. I know, 5-minute folklore, mate.
China.
Name drop.
Dragons, again.
Yeah,
the Middle East snake gods, Africa serpent gods, and the Mayans, the people of the serpent. So,
New Zealand have a few serpent myths as well. Water serpents.
Hmm.
And a lot of African tales about serpents and serpent gods as well.
Yeah, it's mad. That's mad, right?
Yeah,
they all separately talk of reptilian beings, snakes, dragons coming from the sky and being like gods.
Apart from the royal family, then, are there any in Europe that
no, we've just got David Icke in Europe.
We have the dragon that St. George fought.
Yeah
I mean, we don't even celebrate St. George, do we? It's not even that good of a day.
Most people that celebrate St. George's Day are racist, that's why.
Maybe it's like we all came together and said, if you celebrate this day, you will be marked a racist, and that's how it went.
I don't know, yeah, it's funny. I don't know.
Because no one does celebrate it at all.
The people who celebrate it normally...
skinheads.
Yeah.
Like, when is it?
I don't know the day.
St. George's Day. Because I was thinking, like, St. Patrick's Day is huge.
Yeah. But there's a lot of Irish.
Is it, though?
There's a lot of Irish in America. And that's why it's big. Because it's big in America, it seems like it's big worldwide. Because
but
there's
we're
a big
right
Irish
next to Ireland.
Yeah.
We're like right next to it, and we don't get as much as that.
I mean, I had a few beers.
Like, Trump dresses up in like a green suit, and the White House turns green for the day. It's nuts.
Really?
Yeah, but well, that's the only thing that makes the White House nuts, then.
I think the White House was the true part.
We're not allowed to mention Trump. I'm actually going to beep that.
Okay.
I'm going to beep his name every time it comes
gonna
up. Are
you going
to
beep Trumpton? Because that's a separate issue.
It's a swear word now on this podcast. The only
that's
things
good,
that get
I think
beeped are c**t Trump.
To shed light on that Trump.
Anyway,
um,
yeah, so serpent and snake and dragon
snake beings
everywhere
come from the sky. So Enlil and Enki, obviously being reptilians,
obviously
Enki
being reptilian.
I feel like I'm gonna get so many bad emails from people who know this stuff, but it's fun.
They can swivel.
Enki, apparently, there's a lot of parallels drawn between Enki and the snake in Eden.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the snake being a friend of Adam and Eve, not, you know, being the bad guy who, you know, showed himself.
So rather than trying to trick them, the reading is that he was giving them enlightenment.
Yeah. But Enki, instead of giving them, like, the knowledge of innocence and stuff, like what the Bible would depict, this was more tools and technology, and the Anunnaki, sort of secrets of potentially getting up to their level, you know, teaching them how technology works, or it was like, it was basic tools and construction. But I guess the theory is that Enki knew the end goal of that, and Enlil did as well, and Enlil wanted to destroy us and didn't want us to, you know, we weren't worthy of eventually ascending to the Anunnaki level.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Whereas Enki wanted us to thrive, and that's when we were cast out of the Garden of Eden. Which, the Garden of Eden, there was like an old translation of garden, which is not like how it is. It's like more of a city of Eden.
Right, okay.
Okay.
And I think there's something in the video about it as well. This video, like, I feel like it's really lazy, but this video I've got will just sort of go through it, and obviously we can cut away bits that we don't aren't relevant, but it just had so many good points that I felt like we'd watch parts and stop it and chat about them.
Yeah.
There were so many good bits. There draws parallels between the Garden of Eden and Sumer, and there's one guy's really interesting theory I think you guys will appreciate.
Right.
We have to know where we come from if we're going to have a clear idea of where we're going. If we have illusions and false ideas about who and what we are and how we got here, then that illusory state is just going to continue into the future. We need to understand the forces that were involved in shaping the modern world.
Searching for the Garden of Eden.
Remember, everything is right until it's wrong. You'll know when it's wrong.
It's Ernest Hemingway.
Ancient Sumeria. According to mainstream scholars, this is the birthplace of civilization as we know it. The birthplace of religion, the first science, the first war, and the first written word. Now all that is left is a message buried beneath the sand.
It's one of Iraq's most famous archaeological sites, rising from the desert near Nasiriyah in the southeast, the Ziggurat of Ur, a massive 4,000-year-old temple pyramid, and the surrounding ruins of an ancient Sumerian city.
Archaeologists and scholars have been piecing evidence together for centuries in this area of the world, hoping to prove the biblical stories of the Garden of Eden.
Most people think, well, we're interested in the Middle East because of the oil. And there's a lot of truth to that. But at the same time, you're going to find people who are very interested in these different esoteric philosophies, like the Freemasons in government, the Christians in government. All of these people have long had a strong interest and also believe that there may be some kind of power or some sort of connection there, that if you make it, it empowers you in some way.
What kind of power could these groups have if they could prove how humanity started? The search for something more powerful than our own current reality isn't a modern concept, but rather an ongoing search for the location of the Garden of Eden, the proverbial beginning.
Well, I was going to stop at that point anyway.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you guys stand on America and that going to war with the Middle East, because the Middle East holds all these old secrets.
So we're getting into New World Order, secret society, American stuff again.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, there's a lot of, even if you explain away that there isn't secret societies, there's definitely people in government who have esoteric leanings.
Right.
Who are deep into esoteric things, and if they had the power to go over there and, yeah, start a war for something, but then also they could do others. I mean, do you think they're in Iraq trying to find certain things, or trying to, I don't know.
Surely it's just oil, isn't it?
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, if the Sumerian civilization was in Iraq and they had some crazy stuff, I don't know. Even as I'm saying it, I'm like, I don't know what they'd have, but
yeah, I don't really. This is where I guess it kind of falls apart for me, because I don't know what they'd be after. I don't know what they would be, But then maybe that's just my lack of imagination. I don't know.
Yeah. I never thought of it like that until my Tai Chi instructor said to me, like, yeah, man, they're totally in Iraq for levitation devices. And genuinely, like, not even supposing they might be. It's like, they fucking are.
What's your Tai Chi instructor's name?
Matt.
I wasn't laughing at the ideas he was putting forward, because a lot of our listeners put forth these sort of crazy ideas and stuff. I was just putting forth the idea of, like, I'd never consider it to my Tai Chi instructor, shall we? These are the conversations you're having.
Well, in that Tai Chi class, it was amazing. Like, we were having real crazy conversations every time, you know.
Wow.
But he thought that a lot of this was, rather than like, oh, it's interesting and it could be reality, it's like, no, this is definitely happening. This is definitely happening because the connections in my brain say it is.
I guess, and yeah, like I said, I don't know if it's just my lack of imagination, but
I think people get into the story of, wow, what if they were, you know, what if it wasn't oil? What? It's a good story, isn't it? Like, people, if you want to believe that, that would be a great story, a better story than the oil.
Oh, yeah.
It would make the government seem a little bit more sinister and scary and a bit, like, strange for having esoteric desires.
I mean, things happen all the time that we're not aware of, and we know that governments act for their own gain and their own benefit, and it's not necessarily going to benefit the country for them to share that information. So that does happen.
Yeah.
Just a case of what specifically that is. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's been a fixation amongst biblical scholars, early archaeologists, that everything in the Middle East began on the Euphrates and the Tigris, down in what is today Lower Iraq. And that this is where the Garden of Eden was. This was where everything emerged, good and bad, in the sort of Genesis tradition.
In 1922, English archaeologist C. Leonard Woolley went to southern Iraq to hopefully find the Garden of Eden, based on early discoveries of Sumerian cuneiforms. However, what he actually uncovered instead was the exact location of the ancient Sumerian city of Ur. Was he getting close?
The early archaeologists were trying to prove the Bible, and they were funded by biblical societies. And that's, you know, in other words, they had to come up with the proof, and it ignored a lot of legends and traditions which suggested that these cities were elsewhere.
Could Woolley have ignored some important information that was revealed several years before? In 1849, almost 75 years earlier, thousands of Sumerian cuneiforms were found northwest of Ur at the ancient cities of Sippar and Nippur.
In 1849, Henry Layard performed many excavations on the Sippar site and discovered about 20,000 tablets, Sumerian and Akkadian. And amongst all the tablets discovered, about a dozen of them are about the Garden of Eden.
Could this be the location of the Garden of Eden? Or was this just another clue leading researchers to another location?
Where do you stand on that, Beef? Is there anything you can shed light on with the Garden of Eden and the early archaeologists? Is that something that you would know about?
Yeah, I know a little bit about it. So I know that there are people that there's a lot of evidence to suggest that it would have been in what is modern day Iraq. But then there's other scholars that take evidence and think that it would have been in Syria. I mean, whichever way you look at it, that has to be about right. When you look at I don't know, just if you look at the journey of Old Testament characters. So if you look at like Abraham and you look at Moses and Joshua, if you work it out, then there's evidence to show that there's it could be either of those places, but I think it's Iraq, which is more believable, or not believable, but more
plausible.
Concrete. I think the evidence for Iraq is more, which, I remember them talk, like, it came out, like, a bunch of years ago, and it made a lot of very conservative American Christians unhappy, because at the time we were at war with Iraq, and they couldn't get their heads around the idea that that's where the Garden of Eden was. They're like, oh, there's no way God would choose that place.
But Jesus, you're like, was American, wasn't he?
Yeah, Jesus was a white American man, yeah. Yeah.
Right. See what they're saying now.
Subsequent cultures, whether the Assyrians, whether the Babylonians, who rose to prominence in that area, who were not Sumerians, nevertheless venerated and highly valued everything that the Sumerians did. And that's why we can read the Sumerian language, because those later cultures made a project of taking Sumerian texts and translating them into their language. And those are languages that the scholars could read because they were Semitic languages. They belonged to a language family that where the code could be cracked, whereas Sumerian was an isolate. And without those translations done by later cultures who nevertheless had contact with Sumer, we would not be able to read those Sumerian texts at all.
Were these later cultures able to decipher the beginning of humanity? Sumero-Akkadian researcher and author of 8 books regarding Sumerian translation, Anton Parks, believes that for hundreds of years, we have been translating these tablets wrong.
Gary Zeitlin, who is a scientist who worked on the SETI project for many years and collaborated with NASA, he was very interested in the Sumerian translations, and he provided me with these 10 tablets found at Sippar to check symbols one by one. I noticed one translation saying one thing, and the other saying sometimes the complete opposite. The true translations did not comply. I persistently did research on Hebrew, but nothing was coming out of it. And then, completely by chance, I came across a Sumero-Akkadian lexicon, and this is when I could finally, slowly start to translate the tablets.
What Anton Parks began to translate was a completely different version of the Garden of Eden than we've heard before. Not only had the words been mistranslated, the actual location had been overlooked.
In biblical text, we constantly read about this idea of heaven or paradise. This comes from the Greek paradisios, and this literally means enclosure for wild animals. Not paradise, a term that was later transcribed as garden during the Hellenistic era. If we go back to the original translation in the Sumerian tablets, it says, "The men who serve the gods work for them in the garden and are treated like animals." It is a very clear and recurrent theme. They are slaves who serve the divine community. In Hebraic text, we understand that the humans seem happy in this so-called paradise, which is, in fact, more like a concentration camp, according to Sumerian texts. In my translations, we also discovered the word Karsag, which translated to city of the gods. It's interesting that all the highest points in Turkey are named Karadag, which strangely resembles Karsag.
Karadag translates to Black Mountain, and also refers to the highest mountains in Turkey. The only summit with the name Karadag that is close to the Mesopotamian plain and tributary of the Tigris, and only a few kilometers from the Euphrates, stands 29 kilometers south of the city Sirte and 19 kilometers southwest of the city of Ur. Is this the paradise described in the Sumerian text?
Jerry sent me images of this site from Google Earth. And at the back, on the mountainside, there is a little plain. This is where I think the Garden of Eden of the gods was located, based on my translation of the text.
All we have at the moment is the language to decode from the Sumerian cuneiforms, the cuneiforms that describe a different kind of paradise. These 10 tablets, according to Anton Parks, tell the Sumerian version of how the Garden of Eden was created.
But yeah, so based on the video we just watched, it's really interesting that stuff, because that's literally what I was studying for the last couple of weeks as part of my unit, was translating ancient texts, including biblical texts and things like that, because it was looking at the different variety of jobs that linguists do. And that stuff actually came up, and like, that is someone's job. But part of me is just thinking, how the hell do you translate something that's that old?
Yeah.
And I don't see how they can like look at it again and be like, you know what, actually we translated that wrong. Like, what are you starting from? Based on what?
This is my problem with it. It's like, and you'll see like his translation.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, how can you, what can, unless, like they said, unless there was other cultures that we can transcribe, mm-hmm. who could transcribe them. Like,
well,
the
you would
Rosetta
find
Stone.
Certain, if those languages evolved into modern or more modern languages, we'd have like a route to work from, possibly.
Mm.
And most of that translating stuff is just looking for patterns and like how people communicate and like patterns. Okay, that is used in that context and that context. It could possibly mean this, this, or this, and narrowing it down till you work it out.
Yeah.
You're right. A lot of it would have been just looking at culture and setting and environment, all that kind of stuff. But a lot of it would have been oral tradition. So it would have been people just telling people what it meant.
Yeah.
And that actually oral tradition is way harder. What's the word I'm looking for? It's much stronger evidence than written stuff, because yeah. that was all they had, because most people couldn't write.
No.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, history of human beings as a culture, like, written communication is actually fairly modern compared to the thousands and thousands of years we communicated without writing, just only verbal communication.
Yeah.
So there's all them thousands of years of history where there isn't a written documentation of it.
Yeah.
So it is really hard to piece that history together.
Yeah.
And like, it's making a massive assumption that that culture would value writing down important information rather than just writing down, say, stories or something else. Maybe information wasn't as relevant as stories.
Well, a lot of the initial, like, the writing as a thing was a technology. It was like a breakthrough of communication. So when writing was first invented, the idea of it was that we can now pass on knowledge.
Yeah.
To between generations. It was like you using language to time travel ideas. You could suddenly, the next generations don't have to start from scratch anymore. They mm-hmm. have a basis to build upon and build upon and build upon. So then, you know, human intelligence rose exponentially from the invention of writing. But it was thousands and thousands of years. Writing, yeah, there's thousands and hundreds of thousands of years before writing was even invented.
It would have been stories, because that was the form of entertainment that people had. There wasn't anything else really, particularly if you didn't have the money
mm-hmm.
to go and see live entertainment. It was pretty much it. It was just all storytelling, which is why, you know, if you were to look at the book of Genesis, it's a story. Like, and loads of Genesis is picture language, and it's using metaphor to paint the picture of it, which is what, when you translate that ancient language and text, that's the genre it comes out as. It will come out as like a story, a narrative of something, and it, most of it will depict truth or something that someone has witnessed, but it's mainly just story, because story is timeless, and you can take characters from any time period and translate that easily, rather than trying to translate a language and trying to break down what people mean when they say words. It's, you know, stories like, say, a story about a family, for example, is timeless, absolutely timeless, so it doesn't change. So,
yeah.
And it's really interesting. I find all that sort of stuff really interesting. But, yeah, I think it's like the Garden of Eden stuff. People get so carried away with it. But if you take Genesis as a book, it's basically just a narrative. So it's, you know, it's like the Psalms are poems. So you wouldn't try and use them to gather scientific evidence from them because it's poetry.
Yeah.
So
it's just people taking it too literally, I guess.
I think that's a lot of the problem that comes from people taking religious writings and using it for their own whims is you can't take anything too literally that's in those ancient texts because a lot of it is metaphor or morals through fable and things like that.
Yeah. And that's all the Bible is. It's mainly people. It's just stories about people's life. If you look through it, it's people making mistakes and getting stuff wrong and triumphing and losing. And it's just stories of history, really. So that's all it is. Mm. And someone's just thought to write that down.
Mm. So the Anunnaki.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is amazing.
I mean, it's really interesting conversation, but.
This is where you jump straight. So the rest, there's parts of the video to come where I'll explain now the gods,
right?
Enki and Enlil.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the video sort of witters on a little bit, so we might have to edit. But that, I think his name was Anton Parks, was it? The dude who was translating it there. Mm-hmm. It's like when Hollow Earth, you know, when you're reading the pilot's diary and it's like, yeah, I'm flying through and oh, there's a hole in the earth, and then you come through and it's like, I land and there's aliens and
yeah,
shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like that. It just takes a nosedive into like wildness, but it's great. It's really fun. But it does take, he's translating all this awesome stuff and then it's like, oh, wow, this goes nuts. Like, yeah, right. Because we've still got still loads of the video.
But who are these gods that hope to make Earth their home?
The Epic of Atrahasis and others, they talk about that the Earth was actually administered by a conference of gods or a group of gods in an assembly. It wasn't just one god. Yeah, they would have like their equivalent of the prime minister or the CEO who would be in charge of this group, Enlil, Enki, that were the primary members of this Congress there.
Well, Enki and Enlil in the Sumerian system are an interesting pair. Enlil is this rather sort of overarching, domineering, angry, dangerous entity, and he doesn't really care about humanity. Humanity are not very important to him. But then we have Enki, the trickster, and the god of wisdom, actually, and he does care about humanity, and he intervenes on the human level.
So sorry, Tis, pause it a sec. So you've got like trickster god, who's a bit of a prick.
No, trickster dude's good,
right?
Yeah, the trickster one's like Enki. He's the one who turns out to be, they think is the snake.
Oh, because at the moment it's like he's the trickster dickhead, and then you've got the wise god who's like, no, give humans a chance.
Oh, no, the trickster was the guy who said give humans a chance. Oh. The other one was the angry, destructive one, Enlil.
Oh. So it's the trickster god is actually a positive figure.
Yeah.
Oh, I got that completely wrong.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's more a trickster to the Anunnaki, you know. He sort of goes against the grain, wants to help the humans, where they're all self-absorbed.
Okay. So. If listeners are interested in other positively lit trickster figures, they could listen to the Anansi episode of 5 Minute Folklore, which is all about the African god of stories.
Shameless, absolutely shameless.
The inspiration for Br'er Rabbit as well.
Nice.
Shameless.
Go on.
right, so we...
Yeah, carry on, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They are called gods, but they were humanoid beings of a rather reptilian type. The text of Eden that I translated depict clearly and quite frequently the reptilian features of the gods. I personally estimate that the gods arrived approximately 300,000 years ago. And this derives from the fact that Homo sapiens arrived shortly after. I say this because throughout the text, genetics and the transformation of the human being are recurrent themes. The two particles that compose the word Eden are E, which means home, and Din, or Tin, which is life. But indeed, they are not alone. Humans are already on Earth. Who are these human beings?
If the Sumerian gods realized that they were not alone, what might have been their interaction with these kinds of humans?
What can be noted in the Sumerian tablets, when they clearly speak of creating workers to serve the Anunnas, the main geneticist is always Enki. He works with the genome that is on the planet to create a new kind of human. He is usually helped by priestesses that we often call the Nintis, who are the priestesses of life. They know how to clone with him. He can change the human genomes according to what Enlil asks of him, which would be left-brained, well-disciplined humans.
When we look at the Sumerian tradition, it is a group of beings rather than one being that creates humankind. So it is not a single creator, but a group of intelligent, technologically advanced beings. Where the Sumerian creation varies from the Christian traditions, for example, and some of the native traditions, is in the Sumerian traditions, humankind began with the sacrifice of the life of an advanced being, of a god from Sumeria, so that that god's DNA, or the blood is what the texts say, could be mixed with the elements of the earth to create the first viable human.
Whoa, hang on a second, stop then.
Yeah, this is mental.
So, that is actually really similar to a lot of the ideas that are put forward in Prometheus, which is probably why they're using that clip. I wonder how much Ridley Scott was influenced by the Sumerian and Anunnaki stories and stuff.
Is that what it's about then? Is that
It's about like the... It's about creator god aliens.
Wow.
So, yeah. It's the origin... It's the prequel to the Alien films. It's the origins of that and how that creator god race died out.
That's mad.
Yeah. So it's... A lot of people don't like Prometheus at all because they don't like that it gives... history to the alien characters. They want them to be mysterious. I actually really love it because it is weird alien god creatures. So I actually really like
it. I wanted
Prometheus
to watch it and I liked the trailer, but a lot of people slagged it off. So
yeah,
I
mean, it's
it,
not.
Maybe
that,
I should.
I mean, Alien's a horror film and I actually like that all the films in the Alien franchise are different sort of genres. So it's more sci-fi, it's not like horror. I would say it's the most sort of like weirdo philosophical sci-fi of the series.
Yeah.
And the sequel, Covenant. I actually really like the prequels. A lot of people don't. But I think they're interesting and do interesting things.
Yeah.
And that aspect of Prometheus especially, I always found interesting. And it seems like it's really influenced by this stuff.
That's amazing. I wish I'd watched Prometheus.
Check it out.
Yeah.
It still exists.
No, but anywhere. Like before the episode, I guess.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, well, so it's about like alien creator gods and AI and human exploration and stuff.
Well, actually, this comes up on my notes with the Enlil and Enki stuff. Me and Liz were saying like this might come up in our lifetime. You know, we might be Enki and Enlil with AI. You know, one side wants. A productive, hardworking, efficient computer system which works for us, and then maybe there's going to be another side which is saying, you know, this thing is sentient. You've got to give it free license. You've got to give it an existence, rights.
Yeah, well, that's the world, isn't it? It's a repetitive cycle.
Yeah.
Mad.
We are the new gods.
Yeah, man. AI is an episode in itself.
I want to do a discussion episode on AI.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good.
It'd be really good. I've been holding it off because I'm just like, that is a discussion episode.
So,
hang on a sec, Tis.
Sorry, so the Anunnaki gods...
Yeah.
...were on Earth and created humans, or what's this saying?
Yeah. They came to Earth. I think they wanted to create a slave race, a subservient race...
To make all the gold.
To mine the gold. I don't know why they couldn't mine it themselves.
Lazy bastards.
I take it they had spaceships.
And tools, and they couldn't mine
so
it themselves.
Yeah, so why couldn't they just do it themselves?
Lazy bastards. They're so fucking lazy. That's why we're so lazy.
Yeah.
That's the That's the half of the DNA we got. It's the entitled, lazy side of humans.
How did they know they needed gold if it didn't exist on their planet?
Oh, that's a good question.
Unless they'd mined it, maybe, like, stripped their planet.
Maybe for thousands of years they came down and observed the Earth, observed the wildlife, and recorded the resources. I guess that's what we'd do, right? If we found a new planet with a bit of life, we'd send down scientists, field teams.
And then mine it for its resources.
Definitely.
Like Avatar.
Yeah.
Basically, totally. Avatar.
That's the funny thing. Like, we... Well, I don't know if we resist the idea of aliens coming here. Unobtainium. Like, it's so true that, like...
Yeah, I don't still
know that. Unfucking-tainium. That is unreal.
The what?
Unobtainium.
Unobtainium. Unobtainium.
Yeah, it's a joke.
Is that what it's called?
I'm not a fan of Avatar.
I fucking love Avatar.
I think James Cameron makes great sort of big, you know, movies that appeal to a lot of people, but
yeah,
I'm not a fan of Avatar.
No way.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. It does a lot of things.
It was massively
I like.
Hyped. I feel like it was hyped. It was a good film.
Are you looking forward to those four sequels that are currently in development?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be coming anytime soon.
Yeah, they're making four concurrently
they're
with
not.
Each other right now.
I mean,
they are. They're in production
one
right
more.
Now.
Really?
Yeah.
They're making four. Yeah. What, like they was been making them for ages or
yeah,
they
yeah,
just
yeah.
released, just announced?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
No, they've been making them for ages. They're literally like opening Avatar World at Disneyland and launching like all this stuff.
I feel like Whoa. The second film will be okay. The third will be shit. The fourth and fifth will be unwatchable.
I think... It's like, the thing is, it's been in the process for so long, even if the first one flops, it's too late to, like, back out of it.
Yeah.
If that first one comes out and flops, which it won't, though.
They're banking that a lot of people like
Yeah,
Avatar.
I think when that, everyone keeps saying, oh, it's going to flop, I think when that next one comes out, it'll be massive again.
I think people buy into the world, they buy into the ideals.
When he wrote that first film, he wrote like a whole like books and books, like encyclopedia of how, like, you know, all the wildlife, how the world works. Like, he put a lot of effort into it. So he knows how it works. So I don't know, it might be massive. I'm not excited because I didn't really like the first one, but
yeah.
Didn't he write it when he was doing Titanic?
I don't know.
I'm sure I heard that somewhere. Unobtainable was just, it was just too far for me. I was just watching it and thinking, yeah, this is sort of all right. And then when they said unobtainable, I was like, I'm out.
Unobtainium.
I get what he was doing with it. It's kind of so on the nose that it's almost like intentionally done, but I still like, nah.
It's like J.K. Rowling using Avracadavra as the killing curse on Harry Potter. You're like, oh,
yeah,
come on, Rowling.
Yeah, yeah.
Fucking, come yeah. on.
It's a little bit too winky.
Yeah.
And then
stinky.
Winky makes wanky.
Widow Twinky.
Twiddo wanky, right. I feel like this episode is like fits the starts of us doing very deep, intuitive, serious discussion
yeah.
and then just absolute nonsense.
Interspersed with nonsense.
Yeah,
yeah.
absolutely. We the were doing Goldmember impressions half hour ago.
I feel like that's a good recipe, a recipe for a good episode. I
yeah.
Content in bundles. You've
or
got
we just lose both sides of the audience.
Yeah, maybe. I was listening to podcasts today and I was just listening and just like, I fucking hate podcasts. I just don't like listening to other people.
Yeah, there's
I don't
only
understand
a couple
why
I can
people
stick
like
with
us. But Lids, this is like, nah, you're different. You're different. I don't know.
I said to Becca, I actually kind of hate podcasters now. And sometimes I feel a bit embarrassed to say I'm a podcaster because so many
yeah.
of them are.
Yeah.
Even though I love the podcast and I love podcasting as an idea, there's so many bad, annoying, self-righteous podcasters out there that have sort of given the genre and medium a bad name.
Yeah. I think it's... Yeah. I don't know what it is.
Like,
it's something about
intentionally,
it.
Intentionally, I had to write a forum post to my tutor group to introduce myself. And I purposely didn't say podcaster. I said I'd worked on sound projects.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want them to think I was a podcaster because they would instantly make a judgment against me based on
definitely
white guy around 30 years old who does a podcast. They'll think I'm some like blowhard, which most guys are.
It's for mainly guys who love to chat, whereas us, it's more...
It's guys who think their opinion is fact.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And want it to be heard. I don't necessarily want my opinion to be heard, but...
No, neither do we.
Yeah, we're just chatting
shit. I
mean,
we said it a million times. We started this as an excuse to like hang out and chat shit with each other.
Pretty much.
So it's that's recorded... what it still is to me, yeah.
Hangouts.
But give us put a topic forward that's interesting to talk about.
That's why that's why it's annoying when you get people that leave a bad review, like you said earlier, because you're like, okay, well, so you listen to it and it's clearly not for you, so just don't listen to it again. Doesn't mean it's a bad podcast.
I feel like it ruined their day having to listen to like 20 minutes of us.
But then again, flip side to that, when we get nice emails or people saying, I love your podcast, it's the best one out there, I'm like, oh, that's really great. That's
it's
amazing.
Funny that I feel like we should have more negative reviews. Like, not that we're bad, but I feel like there should be...
Oh, they're very few and far between.
I feel like there should be more. I feel like there should be more people stumbling across us by accident and not liking us. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like we've got enough exposure on the podcasting websites.
Yeah, I'm really heartened by the lack of bad reviews we get.
Yeah, that's what I feel. I feel like people listen and they get that we're not opinionated, so they can't insult us.
But the people that are out there that would leave a bad review, like I've listened to about 10 or 11 rugby podcasts, and I've only found one that I like listening to.
Yeah, that's the thing about podcasts. It's hard to find one on the subject.
Exactly.
That you like, with hosts that you like.
Yeah, I've listened to ones before, and I'm like, I like your content, but you're a prick. I can't listen to you.
Yeah, exactly. And you can't listen to that many hours of someone who actively...
Yeah, but I'm not
going
to leave a bad review because they're, you know, people still listen to it. I'm just going to listen to the other one, so it's not...
Yeah, that's true.
Anunnaki.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. This is like, keep flying off course.
I'm actually loving this episode, but...
Yeah.
These are the people who have the knowledge to clone. They can clone themselves and then humans. In the text, it says they take the genes from their opponents, who they consider inferior, who they name as Kingu. They use their blood, and they will go on to create the new human who is going to serve them with these genes.
Researchers like Greg Braden stumbled across some research that has connected the Sumerian translations to an actual genetic change in our chromosomes.
Shedding new light on these creation stories is with the mystery of human chromosome number 2. Human chromosome number 2 is the second largest chromosome in the human body. It forms about 8% of DNA in every cell. And what makes it such a mystery is that it appears to be the result of an ancient fusion of pre-existing chromosomes from primates that have been fused in a very precise way, and the fusion site has been modified and stabilized so that human chromosome number 2 is optimized for us today. This has happened in a way that cannot be explained by evolution as we know it today. Now, why is this important? Human chromosome number 2 contains the genes that largely set us apart from all other forms of life. The cortex of the human brain that gives us the ability for things like logic, empathy, sympathy, compassion, the ability to consciously trigger conscious states of self-healing within our bodies. These are possible because of what has happened with human chromosome number 2.
Could chromosome number 2 be the work of a master geneticist, otherwise known as Enki from the Sumerian text?
Justement, à tout moment, il peut aussi clandestinement changer le code humain pour...
It is said that Enki secretly modifies the human genes by group or by location and imbues some humans with a knowledge that is different, to the point where the other gods turn against him. His experiment will change the human genes to enlighten mankind. And throughout this cloning process that the Anunnas and Enlil are overlooking, I think that some humans filter through all of this and start becoming independent.
Anton Parks points out that this is something that the gods did not expect from these new humans that keeps appearing in the ancient texts, and that is the human ability to be more than just slaves. This forms a division of the gods, a division that causes a war that has set the tone for humanity today.
There are certain very interesting parallels with the story of the Sumerian origin of modern humanity and what we see in modern dialogues about AI. We now have the rebooted Westworld, in which something that originated as the idea of a robotic consciousness turns into essentially a flesh and blood creation, which is then infused with a consciousness, thus asking the question, if they can reproduce, if they are self-aware, is this not the next level of humanity?
An interesting and very important name in the biblical text and the Sumerian text is the word Adam from the Garden of Eden. Extensive tests have been conducted to see where this word came from, consistently looking for Hebrew roots, but it is a Sumerian word, which means animals. Again, we understand that human beings were considered to be animals by the Sumerian gods, and this is where lies the conflict between two gods, Enki and Enlil. Enki wants to treat them like the other gods.
Just stop. Really interesting.
Yeah.
Really crazy.
Yeah, nuts.
Yeah.
It is like you said before about how us creating AI now is like a mirror of this Anunnaki creating, like, the human race thing from before. It's like a repetitive cycle.
Yeah.
And I was actually thinking of, like, they ended up using the similarity between the HBO series of Westworld in that, which is exactly what I was thinking about. It's so similar. I wonder how much inspiration was taken from, like, Anunnaki stories.
Yeah.
And him saying about how Adam could possibly translate as animals.
Yeah.
So what's Eve?
Eve was a rib of Adam, wasn't it?
Adam comes from the word just meaning man, mankind. Or earth.
See, this is the discrepancy of translation that I knew would come up. Mm. So they're saying Adam could translate as animal, and the reason it's Adam is the first man is because that we were seen as animals by the Anunnaki, our possible creator. Then in other translations, like Beef said, is Adam literally just means like man or human.
Mankind.
Or yeah, mankind.
Yeah.
So sure it's interesting. The reading is all based on like how you are going to translate those texts, and no one can say you're wrong or you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On a translation, there's no proof. There's no dictionary or alphabet we can refer to.
Totally. Totally.
Do they have any Anunnaki footprints?
Any Anunnaki what?
Footprints.
Footprints. No, they didn't have any feet.
Really? Yeah. Well. I would believe it.
All right, poor prince then.
Poor prince.
These pictures.
Yeah.
They're from Sumeria, right? The images of the Anunnaki.
Yeah, they are.
And they're on carvings and stuff there.
Yeah, but apparently one of the rules was Sumerians could not depict the Anunnaki as they actually were. So these winged sort of men with big beards, obviously they say were actually reptilians, were actually more
where do they get that
serpent-like
from?
I can't remember where I got that information from.
Someone just said it. They translated it.
It was somewhere.
It was probably in a translation, joking aside.
To do with why the statues weren't reptilian-like, but yet the tablets depicted them as reptilians.
Right.
And it's more serpent-like.
This is, again, it's like the Mormon thing again, where it's like, oh yeah, God came down and told me there's all these other chapters of the Bible and you actually should be doing this stuff. Yeah, oh, right, yeah. Well, can we see him? No, he just said it to me. Oh.
Yeah.
What did he look like? I'm not allowed to tell you. Oh. Do you know what I mean? It's a little...
Yeah, totally. I mean, when this guy who transcribed
I'm coming out here as being someone who doesn't believe in the things that Mormons believe, if that wants to make me a controversial figure.
I don't think we have to come out about that.
I want to know if we have any Mormon listeners, genuinely. I'll be interested if we have any Mormon listeners.
Did we get anyone saying that they have a faith at all, like any kind of faith?
We have quite a few Christian listeners.
Interesting.
Which is interesting. I think...
Is that listeners who are Christian or listeners called Christian?
Both. Oh, man. Actually, both. Yeah, we do. I think a lot of that is down to the fact that we do cover like sort of spiritual based topics, which I think a lot of these shows don't. And we always, one, we have a mix of faiths as hosts anyway, so we have fresh viewpoints. And also, if we're covering something that isn't any of our beliefs, then we'll still give it a fair whack, as we would want people to give what we think fair.
No
Mormons. back to the Anunnaki again. It's interesting. This whole thing is really interesting about how it seems to be this whole sort of story of the Anunnaki creating humans, and then humans turning it, having their own consciousness, and then thinking we're bad slaves and all this stuff. It is like a trope which feels prominent in fiction, especially like sci-fi stuff,
yeah,
throughout the ages, and now could possibly be a reality in terms of humans creating AI. And it's interesting how far back these sort of stories go. It's a trope.
Archetypes.
It's a trope that's as age old as humans themselves.
Yeah, it's mad. It really is mad. The whole loop thing, definitely.
And it's a trope in storytelling that I actually really like. I always find it interesting. So to hear that it's that old is really interesting.
Yeah, it's nuts. Should I put some more on?
Yeah, go.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
These two Sumerian gods have a conflict over the use of humans, and it is to be the root of the biblical story of the serpent in the garden. As the story unravels, the riddle starts with the origin of the word Satan, or Satan in English.
Satan in Sumerian means the administrator. For years, everybody has been looking to find where this word came from. Books revolve around this issue. It is a Sumerian term. I don't understand how nobody saw it. It is very clear. We find it in ancient lexicons. Enlil is often referred to as the great Satan, the master administrator. In the Sumerian text, Enlil systematically asked Enki to go negotiate and talk with humans. He is always the one to deal with them. Remember, he is a humanoid with reptilian features. And in Sumerian tablets, he is always, or very often, called the serpent, just like in the Bible. He is the only one that the humans are going to see. And when they see him, they see a serpent-like humanoid. I reckon this is why he is called the serpent in the garden. He is a friend of the humans.
In the biblical text, the serpent tempts Eve with an apple from the forbidden tree of knowledge. Yahweh, or God, from the Bible, forbids the humans in the garden to partake from this tree. According to Parks, the Sumerian version of this story translates Yahweh, or the biblical God, into the great Satan, which according to Sumerian text is Enlil, and the serpent in the garden as Enki, who has become a friend of the humans.
It is interesting to wonder why the serpent in Sumerian text, just like in the Bible, comes to the woman. I think there are two reasons. The first one is that I think the woman was more accessible and available when she was in the garden. Therefore, he was more often around women who were collecting food for the colony. The second reason is that I think women are the future of mankind. They raise their children, they transmit their knowledge to their children. Enki is going to tell the women the secret of tool making. This is expressed as Nish in Sumerian, which means tree. This means for the first time mankind could have two sides of the tool. The side is fundamentally good so that they can take care of themselves, and the tool that is fundamentally bad, which they could use to defend themselves.
So it's the power to defend and feed yourself, which the gods disagreed on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so basically the Sumerians took the biblical account of creation and just went, nah, don't like that, and just changed it.
Yeah, well, I guess the Sumers came before, right?
Sorry?
The Sumerians were like 2500 BC, but that's, I guess that's if the tablets are being translated, which again, I like...
Oh, that's what it all hinges on.
It all hinges on that, and that is the most shaky ground, because, I mean, you're studying language, and, like, you've shed light on a lot of the problems already, and it's just like, yeah.
In terms of linguists' jobs and translating and things, I've studied throughout my course 1 week's worth, and already I can see a few things in that that are flaky.
Yeah.
So I've been a student for all of 2 months. I spent a week doing, about jobs of linguists and stuff and translations, and I'm already like, that's a little bit shaky.
My problem is that the translator, and maybe I'm being harsh, but the translator dude has got like computer generated images of all the stuff, and like, it just seems like a lot for a translator to go to. You know, if you translated some tablets, you'd just give the information objectively. You wouldn't then turn it into maybe...
Yeah, that's what I feel like. Again,
It's the money spin.
With the translating, what you're doing is looking for patterns and stuff. So you would see, okay, so that's used in that context. In that context, it probably means this, da-da-da-da, and sort of create a knowledge of that, like how they do with hieroglyphics and things. But
yeah.
But you're not putting your own spin on it. I feel like he's projecting something onto it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, he's like, oh, if only that meant that instead of that, or we could sort of twist it that it could mean this, and it's creating a more fantastical version.
Totally.
And also, be fantastical or not, like Beef was saying earlier, also it could just be a story. He could just be translating a story that someone wrote down.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
I think that this is what paganism is, from a biblical point of view. That's a lot of the Old Testament. It's just God sending like a messenger to a local, to a city or a town or somewhere where they were, where slavery was rife, and they were using people for their own political gains and dominating and trying to influence them and be powerful and dominate them, to say, yeah, this scripture that you've taken, this text, you've taken this to a whole new ground, and you're using it for your own gains. So a lot of it is just taking stuff, like Bobby said, just adding like fanciful stuff on there for the gain of what you could get out of it. Just if you say there's a God here, and if he says if you do this, he's going to be happy with you.
Mm. I mean, it's very easy to twist sort of ancient texts and language to something that you want it to mean. And it's very easy to do that with biblical texts as well. So when you combine the two, you've got like a double threat of like, let's push something if you want to, in a way in which is more appealing to you.
Yeah. You can take that with anything.
It's super interesting.
If you took a text message and sent it to all three of us could come up with a completely different meaning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With the same text based on your culture.
But I've saved the best till last.
Oh, okay. Is this your big wrap up? I like when he does this.
This is, for me, the biggest visualization that sort of, for me, I'm just like, wow, this is great. So
he's going to drop a bomb.
Tablet.
This is like when we thought Hollow Earth was a bit crazy, and then he dropped in the bomb that there were Nazis down there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Don't tell me the Anunnaki are Nazis.
Bring it back. This is a tablet, the Sumerian tablet.
Okay.
This top one up there, right?
Right.
So,
this is just showing us a picture of a Sumerian tablet.
So there. Can you see this star arrangement?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So in the picture, there's two humanoid figures with the star and planets behind them, like a constellation or something.
So that is our solar system, with every planet accounted for in its position that we know it scientifically.
Right.
That's quite amazing.
But in there is a 10th planet.
I counted 11.
10, 11. I guess one of them's the sun.
Yeah, one's the sun. That's what I thought.
But yeah, it's got them all in the right positions. The set is, you know, it's the right sizings, kind of.
Okay. That's actually really cool.
That's Sumerian. That came from Sumer. That hasn't been doctored. That's a real hieroglyph, whatever you want to call it.
I mean, even without you revealing the 10th planet, I was like amazed.
Yeah.
That it's like an accurate representation of our solar system.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Because how would they even know like Mercury existed, let alone you know, even further afield ones?
And our place in the universe, that because, you know, later on we believed that the universe revolved around us.
Yeah.
But there's them back, you know, 4,500 years ago saying, no, the sun is the center and we spin around the sun. That's mad.
That's really amazing. I haven't really got a response to that. And the 10th planet just adds a little firework to the end of that.
Yeah.
Full stop to the doubters. Anunnaki's real.
You're a believer.
It definitely heightens, it brings up the Sumerians in everyone's estimation.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great ending bombshell, because that's got my brain swimming of like, that's bonkers. Unless they're writing the first ever sci-fi story.
Yeah.
That's really crazy.
But to get it on the nose as like that, you know.
Yeah.
That's mad.
Who verified that? Was it just how do they verify that it's accurate?
Someone just like, there's some sand on it.
Someone looked at Wikipedia.
No, I don't know. I mean, it. I think I watched an actual Sumerian documentary. Yeah, I mean,
that's crazy.
Don't just trust me. Definitely check. But
no, I do trust you.
Yeah. That's nuts.
That is really crazy.
Love it.
I'm glad you didn't open with that.
No.
He kept us dragging along.
I wanted
kept that
to...
in his pocket. That was great.
I wanted you guys to think it was over and that I'd spilled the beans at the start, but you know.
I really love these episodes where one of you guys will bring something that I wasn't expecting and give me something I knew nothing about.
Until
now.
Mm. But something you wanted to, you know, something that is in the lexicon. Like,
oh yeah, that benefits me. Like knowing that it enriches my knowledge. Like I love that I know all this stuff about Sumerians and Anunnaki and stuff. It's not going to help me get a job or anything. But
people are interested.
It enriches me. It's so interesting to hear things I knew nothing about.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. No, it's good.
So there you go. I could definitely have filled up another episode with
that has flipped my lid.
Maybe when I find some on the Sumerian, the Noah story, you know, the flood and stuff. Because there was a lot more accounts of different things, but I wanted to keep it on a track which we could follow. Mm-hmm. Like just one story, one version, one...
It's the thing that I love about our show. It's also the constraint of our show in which... we don't like to linger too long on a topic. It's we come in, we give an overview, and then we're on to something else. It's variety. Yeah. And even the topics we do come back to and back to and back to, like the Warrens, it's like a different case every time sort of thing. But that's interesting.
There you have it.
Awesome.
Loved it.
That's great. That has well and truly twisted my melon.
I feel like we're back with a bang.
It was really fun researching.
By the way, my job interview, I talked about weird tales, and it's what got me the job.
Really?
That's amazing.
I had to talk about situations and how convincing I can be, and I talked about how I posited to you that Mothman was real. I spent like 20 minutes talking about Mothman in my job interview.
Really? That's so funny.
Were they convinced?
They loved it. They were like, oh, that's such like an original interview. They were like, I'm going to go and look up about Mothman now because I'd never heard of it and stuff.
That's so interesting.
They believe. You convinced them.
Yeah. They were like, oh, you really were thinking outside the box.
Wow, that's crazy.
So anyway, yeah, I loved the Anunnaki. I feel like we're back with content that people want. More Warrens. We got a werewolf story in there, which people have been waiting for. We got more aliens and like ancient alien stuff, which people love. So Beef, no pressure, but you're next.
Oh, great. I'll try and pick something that's good. No idea what I'm going to do yet, so I'll have a look.
We're right. Going at that like popular ancient aliens market right now. Attacking it. Anunnaki. People are going to search that and they're going to find the pod from Anunnaki. It's a real popular train of conspiracy, I guess.
Okay, Tis, so are you done?
Oh, yeah, let's wrap up.
Cool. Beefy, have you got anything you want to say before we wrap up?
No, I'm good. I think that's about right.
No, I love that one.
Yeah, nice one. Thanks, Tis. It was good.
Before we do wrap up, I want to say thanks to all the listeners who have given us amazing feedback on the return of Weird Tales and who loved the first episode back and all the positive messages we had. Even like feedback to say, you know, we said hope it all sounds good. Even people were just saying like, yeah, the sound's great. Like, thank you. We really appreciate that sort of, you know, helpful feedback. Thanks, everyone. Really appreciate it. Listener of the week this week. I want to give it to Victoria Burson, who messaged us the other day on the Facebook page. She just discovered the show, but she said she was cracking up about us talking about on an old episode about baguettes. Yeah, people putting baguettes in their shoes.
Yeah, what was that about? I can't remember that.
I was really laughing when I got that message.
This was a gag I got. Cole Pilkington said it on XFM.
Oh, right.
But I love regurgitating the fact because I think the fact was on like a... What's that baguette shop in Houston? You know, like the...
Upper Crust.
Upper Crust had a quote on their wall and Cole Pilkington read it and it was like, in the Napoleonic Wars, baguettes were invented by the French to put up their boots in war, to go off to war. And ever since it's stuck in my head and I always regurgitate it as a sort of faux fact.
Right, okay.
And yeah.
So we were talking about that on an old episode, apparently, and I had no recollection of it.
I think I just pulled it out from,
to remember that at all.
Anyway, it really made me laugh, and Victoria mentioned it on her post. So Victoria, that's where it came from. It's Tis ripping off Cole Pilkington. But I still appreciate you pointing out because it really made me laugh. So Leah, listener of the week. Thanks for listening.
Listener of the week.
Yeah, thanks, Victoria.
I think that's all. Oh, we had some more emails about possible outro music stuff. So if you want us to feature any music you've written or made or recorded or whatever, then get in contact with me about that. I'd love to feature some more of that at the end of the episodes. There will be that at the end of this episode. I promised last time that I would play... song by vamping here one of our listeners so Dougie, Christopher Dugmore, one of our listeners, he's got a song which he sent to me, which I'm going to put at the outro to this episode. The song is called Something Left Behind. So the outro to this episode's music, this music that we play as the outro to this episode, is an original song by a listener, so I hope you enjoy that.
Amazing.
If you want to get in contact with the show with music or any other things, just to say hi, let us know technical feedback or anything. Yeah. It's unexplainableuk@mail.com. You can find more information and accompanying blog post to this episode and every other at weirdtalesandtheunexplainable.com. There'll be links to the video that Tis was playing and pictures, the bomb that dropped the bomb at the end of the episode, that'll be up there. All that stuff. Also on the website, you can find ways to donate and support the show. Find our links to our Twitter page, our Facebook page, and all the social media stuff. And I think we're about done.
Done.
It was a long recording sesh, but I really enjoyed it, guys.
It was good fun.
Yeah.
Back in 2 weeks' time, Tissy, sign us out.
Until next time, where are you, Anoraki?
No, that's just rubbish.
Anorak, Anorak.
Yeah. All right. Anyway.
Anoraki later.
See you later. See you later, guys. Enjoy this song from Dougie. It's called Something Left Behind. I'll also put a link to the, what's it called, SoundCloud page for it on the blog as well. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Summer rain, a French guitar that you played, the dogs bark and you ran to the jungle again. But you did nothing wrong, and something's left behind. It's not your fault, you're not to blame. Home was not the same. Not the if you emailed, all we felt was the adventure. But you did nothing wrong, and something's left behind. It's not your fault, not to blame. Hope was not the same.
Sumerians had 7 tablets, which we found, and
did they have a headache?
People
don't overdose.
No, that's the last one, last bad gag.
That is rubbish. That was poor.
Cut it.
Thing is, if I'd have said it, you'd be keeping it in.
Yeah.
Ooh, put it in rubs.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here.
I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.